I've always followed my passion and turned that passion into a career. You have to run in order to get better at running. The more hours per week spent running and not doing other activities will yield greater fitness gains.
That was Deborah Warner. This is Marnie Salop. Thanks for tuning into my podcast, Marnie on the Move. Each week, I will be inviting interesting, innovative movers and shakers to join me on the show and share their story. You will discover and hear from thought leaders, experts, influencers, and entrepreneurs from the worlds of wellness, sports, beauty, fitness, fashion, and more. Marnie on the Move will feature an eclectic mix of people I know, work with, and think are generally doing cool things. On each episode, I sync up with my guests about life, career, and training, and showcase their expertise and story. What do you think about when you think about running? Besides Murakami, of course. I think about my next guest, who pioneered a business around her passion for running, and she came up with the idea while out on a run. Deborah Warner is the founder of Mile High Run Club, an indoor-outdoor run training studio based in New York City. Deborah has bridged the idea of boutique fitness with the sport of running with her first-of-its-kind studio. On today's episode, I sync up with Deborah about where it all began, from her childhood athletics, her long career as a well-known, internationally recognized contemporary mixed media artist, and her newest work of art, Mile High Run Club. When we talk about running, we talk about everything from running a company to running as a lifestyle and everything in between. Today's episode is fueled by Some Potion. I am such a huge fan of their super high quality tonic herbs, mushrooms, and superfoods. I started using these transformational foods and supplements around 2 years ago, and they have been serious game changers for my health, my energy levels, and even my sleep. Typically, I alternate between their Yin Power potion and ashwagandha for all things balance, cordyceps if I'm feeling low energy and want to boost my workout, or chaga when my immune system is feeling taxed. I simply add it to my morning coffee or smoothie, and I'm on the move. Some Potion offers a variety of rejuvenating, restorative, and healing organic supplements and transformational foods. Head over to their website, somepotion.com, and see for yourself. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Marnie on the Move on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Android. And of course, you can go to our website at marnieonthemove.com. And while you're there, sign up for our newsletter because we have some exciting announcements, deals, and giveaways. Thanks again for tuning in to Marnie on the Move. What's going on with Mile High Run Club?
The thing I'm most excited about is our new class.
Okay, tell me about it.
So it's a full body strength class. It's 45 minutes. We used to tread a little bit for a couple of hill climbs only climbing in the class, and kettlebells. It's similar to the strength we do in the dash class. There's an additional rep, but the approach is the same. It's designed for runners. It is full body. Our customers were asking for it.
Do you find yourself always suggesting to runners that they need to do strength and core, and so you just organically developed this class?
Yes. A lot of our customers, our very loyal customers, will provide feedback on a regular basis and very detailed feedback. It's, you know, spreadsheets with their PR times and interesting stuff. I mean, it's great that they're so engaged.
Yeah. Well, you've built such a great community here at Mile High Run Club.
Oh, thank you.
Tell me about Mile High Run Club, just in case there's somebody listening that doesn't know about this incredible studio.
Well, we have a lot of runners like yourself, Marnie, who train and race as a lifestyle. Triathletes, people who do at least one or maybe two half marathon distance races a year. We have a lot of full marathon distance runners. Mm-hmm. I call that group recreational racers. But it is a training studio for runners. We have indoor classes. We have an outdoor program as well. And we have a recovery room now in Nomad at our Nomad location on West 25th Street. So we were the first studio of its kind to focus on running. Our goal is to stay true to the sport and help our customers become better runners.
You have a mix, though, of beginners, like people who've never run before could come here and take a class. Like, you have a class for everyone.
We do.
Yeah.
And we do have a lot of, they call themselves non-runners, but we call them new runners.
Right. I like that. That's a good spin.
Yeah. That's a very large portion of our customer base as well. Like, the people who run for fitness are very new to the sport.
And then people who are coming here, like seasoned athletes and runners who are very dialed into the advantages of being on a treadmill.
Correct. People more like you.
Right.
Yeah.
Which has been so helpful the last few weeks, because I was kind of feeling very, you know, with starting this podcast and, you know, running two other companies, I haven't really had a lot of time to run. So I figured, like, in between meetings, I have been coming here and just like taking classes at like 12 o'clock or 4 o'clock or whenever I can. And I just happen to be lucky that my meetings are in the neighborhood of either NoHo or Nomad. And it's been great because I've noticed that my speed is getting a lot better just from taking a couple classes on the treadmill.
Well, that's great to hear.
Yeah. So are you opening any more locations?
Yes, we have. We've signed a lease for a location on Lexington and 85th Street.
Cool.
We take possession in June, and that will open early fall.
Cool.
Of this year.
That's so exciting. And when? And you're still doing all your outdoor programs, right?
Yes. We had 62 participants in our marathon training program last summer.
That's amazing. That's
yes,
so incredible.
Growing.
That's really great. I remember when you first started.
Yeah. We have two half marathon training programs, and another new program that we're introducing this year in a couple of weeks is a desk to 5K.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 6-week program, mostly indoors.
You're doing more classes at the track?
The track is currently closed down for repairs, unfortunately.
Okay.
The East River track, which is the one we typically train at,
right,
is closed until September. So the outdoor runs will be taking place from New York Roadrunners Run Center. And we've been going to the east side and just running up and down on the path and the bridges. And we have one outdoor run from the Nomad location on Tuesday morning with Jess Mabold,
mm-hmm,
that goes to the West Side Highway.
So have you guys teamed up with New York Roadrunners?
They allow us to use the Run Center.
Okay.
For our bag drop for Saturday long runs.
That's nice.
Yeah. And we have a great relationship with New York Roadrunners. It's been ongoing pretty much since we launched. You know, we promote their races. They have us on their website. And since they opened the Run Center, I've been invited to speak on a panel there. So we've been involved in a couple of events. We've had events there,
mm-hmm,
at the Run Center for our marathoners, like Q&A.
Okay.
So,
how many classes do you have now?
71 a week in Nomad, at the Nomad location. And down here, it's about 61.
Yeah.
A little less.
And so you started out training. Like, you started out as a runner.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you're, like, running the business.
Now I feel like I'm running a different kind of race.
So I think this is, like, really something that has been coming up a lot with other entrepreneurs that I speak to and founders, which is, like, you start out doing something that you love.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes like a business, and that's great because that's what you want. But like, how do you get back to doing what you love?
Yeah. I've been thinking I'm going to have to retire.
From what? Work or running?
From work. And I'm in a relationship now.
Right. And you're getting married.
We're talking about doing it this year. Whether
okay.
it comes together or not, we'll see. But it's on our mind.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's a good place. That's a good place to start. I see on Instagram that he has been doing some running with you on occasion.
Yes. So we love the trail in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
We go to Philly often on the weekends. He's from Chestnut Hill area, and there's a trail called Forbidden Drive in the Wissahickon area, and it's historic. There's a bridge from like 1805 or something like that. It's a very old bridge and a historic inn along mm-hmm. the trail. So we do about 5 to 8 miles usually on that. And for not being a runner, he does really, really well. He's in good shape because he plays squash.
Mm-hmm. That's a very hard sport.
Yeah. Yeah. That's his primary sport. That's what he's most passionate about.
So he's athletic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's played squash about 3 times a week.
How did you come up with the idea for Mile High Run Club?
I originally came up with the idea. I knew I wanted to do something with runners because I was already working with runners at Equinox. And then after Equinox, when I had my independent training business, and I was tossing around a couple different ideas from like an indoor trail concept, which would have been like insane. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure how I pulled that off.
That probably comes from your art background and creativity.
Yeah, I was really, some of these ideas were really out there. And then at one point I thought I was losing runners in Central Park. They were getting lost. I thought there's got to be a better way to train runners in a group.
Right.
So they don't get left behind, or at least feel intimidated to show up with a group with runners who might be faster than them. So I thought that it was just, it seemed like once I had this idea, it seemed like such a no-brainer, and I couldn't believe no one had done it before.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I found out some of the box gyms were doing group treadmill classes, but I really thought that I was the first person who had this idea when I came up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was around like 2011.
Okay.
I thought, okay, we should just do something like spinning for runners.
Right.
And then no one gets left behind. Everyone can work at his or her own effort level, complete the same workout in the same class. A seasoned competitor can run next to a new runner. That everyone goes at his or her own effort level. So we use perceived effort in class.
Mm-hmm.
We have some guidelines for speed targets based on the heart rate zone somewhat. And it works, the method we use works really well. You know, you find like very competitive runners running in class next to, you know, a variety of fitness levels.
Yeah, and that's great.
Great.
Yeah, because I could come in and run next to an Olympic athlete and it's kind of inspiring.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, for those who are competitive, it brings out their competitive nature. But I also think it makes speed training more accessible to the runner who really doesn't know how to do that, how to approach it.
Right.
Like they wouldn't know what to do if they went to a track.
Right.
For
like
example.
Doing intervals or doing sort of like speed work.
Yes.
Yeah. How important is that for a runner to be doing that?
So, okay, that was something I realized when I became a triathlete and I was working with Sean Green at Chelsea Piers, where you train, the importance of speed training. And he, I just never forget, he told me this is the key to getting faster and I wanted to get faster.
Right.
So I started doing intervals. I started showing up for their track workouts and it's just beautiful how it works. I mean, there is no other way to get faster. You have to do speed and interval training for runners has been around since the mid part of the 20th century, early-ish part of the 20th century. And it just works. And it works for all types of runners.
For endurance, for speed runners, for new runners.
Yes. You know, and I think seeing how it worked for my own running made me a believer. It's so exciting when you're working with runners who maybe don't necessarily know how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know they want to get faster. And then you just like open this door for them.
Yeah. I think it's great to do it on. So I do speed work, not enough speed work. I'm doing speed work once a week, but I'm not, you know, like right now I'm training for Brooklyn all by my, I don't have a coach, and which is a really bad place for me to be. Cause if I don't have a coach, like nobody's telling me what to do and then I'm not focused. And, but I feel like I don't want to have a coach because I can't decide if I want to be a triathlete or a runner. So anyway, I'm training for Brooklyn and I'm training for a triathlon in June. And so I've been definitely doing one day of speed work, whether it's, you know, 5 miles or 8 miles, but not all speed work. Like 2 miles are always built in of a warm up.
Okay.
You know, there's at least like 3 miles of focused speed work or 4 or 5 miles, but that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I need to up it if I want to get faster.
Yes. It should be about 1/3 of your overall running training should be speed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you say you're going to train for a half marathon, is it always a third of whatever you're training for, like your weekly distance?
Yes, it is a third. And you can split it by days, by hour, by minutes. So for example, if you're running 6 days a week, mm-hmm. two of those days should be higher intensity runs. And the most benefit is actually if you split up your week so that your solo steady state runs are slow, mm-hmm. and they should be slow.
Like zone two slow.
Yeah. Yep. In the aerobic zone in order to build mitochondria. So mm-hmm. their changes occur on a cellular level, oxygen delivery and absorption. And then the speed should be truly at a higher intensity. So you really want to kind of have a goal with each run. And then mm-hmm. obviously if you get into longer distance race training, you start doing tempo runs and, right. you know, there are other types of runs mm-hmm. to add to a weekly program.
Right.
But that's more for the, you know, it's more complex once you get to the marathon distance or, you know, even the half marathon distance, you'll want to do some tempo runs as well.
Right. Yeah. And tempo runs are running at race pace.
Yeah, exactly. The beauty of speed training too is that you see the results pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. If you have done no speed training, and you're just running and you just do steady state all the time, mm-hmm. or you just try to do more like tempo runs. Like some people think, oh, well, I just want to challenge myself when I go running. So I try to go as hard as I can for 4 miles. Mm-hmm. There's actually less benefit to that than going slow.
Right.
Because of the aerobic base building, the mitochondria that you need to develop in order to build that aerobic base. So slower is better, but when people start doing speed training, they usually see results quickly.
What do you think the turnaround time is?
I think within a month.
Okay.
Yeah. If done on a regular basis.
Got it. That's really interesting because I feel like, so if you're training for a half marathon, mm-hmm. you should have like 2 days a week of speed work and mm-hmm. then maybe 1 day tempo.
Yes.
And then the rest is like zone two and just
yes.
building.
Slow distance.
Slow Correct. Distance. Mm-hmm. So that's always hard for athletes to kind of wrap their head around, especially when they're doing it.
Yeah.
So they should probably listen to some podcasts while they're out on their run.
I know one.
Marnie on the move. It's so crazy though, because I feel like zone two, mm-hmm. it's like so hard to slow down.
It is. And I have always neglected zone two. And I think, you know, you can start, people who do too much high intensity start developing an aerobic deficiency. Mm-hmm. And the benefits, the science, like it's all, like wherever, you can Google it. I mean, yeah. The runner's world, there have been a number of articles about how the importance of going slow.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of discipline and control. And it's actually slower than you think low zone two would feel yeah. if you're going just by perceived effort.
So are you training, are you going to do any races like in the next few months?
I don't have my eye on any particular race at the moment, but I usually fit in one or two.
So what's your normal?
But not a half. I don't think I'm going to do a half.
I was
going to
say,
now.
What's your normal? Right, what's your base right now?
Base pace?
Base, like how many miles are you running a week?
Oh, it's hovering around 10 to 15, which okay. is low for me.
So if you were to do a half marathon, what would you need to get your base mileage up to per week?
Yeah, I would recommend anyone training for a half to be somewhere between 20 on the low end, 30 on the higher end. Mm-hmm. You'll see more seasoned competitors and, you know, more advanced runners doing more than 30
right.
for their halves. But those are the really experienced, like, you know, my yeah. COO who's yeah. running the half on Saturday,
yes.
who is really fast. He has aggressive race goals and he runs more than 30 a week right now.
If you really want to be fast at a half marathon or a marathon, you need to run way more mileage a week than mm-hmm. that race will ever be in yeah. order to be fast, like in order to pull it back to
a competitor. Yeah. Well, higher volume training, obviously, you know, you get what you train for.
Okay.
We've talked about the principle of specificity, right?
So yeah,
the
but
more
talk
time
to me
you
about
spend running,
that. Yeah.
You have to run in order to get better at running. The more hours per week spent running and not doing other activities, mm-hmm. such as spinning or rowing or other types of cardio, swimming, will yield greater fitness gains for
right.
running.
Right.
So both speed and endurance. So the reason high volume runners, and you know, every runner is different too, like we discussed. And some marathoners obviously do over 100 mile weeks, some do a lot less than that, and they're still competitive. Actually spoke with Meb's brother recently, and he's in Meb's in retirement now, just retired this last year, and he's running about 60 miles a week, which is low for him.
Yeah, because so what was he normally
this
running?
This is his fun, these are fun miles, not to compete anymore. But for most of us, 60 would be a very high training volume for a non-Olympian. More doesn't always equal more for everyone.
Right.
I think it really, you have to know your body, and those elite runners do. They know where they need to be in order to perform, you know, their coaches obviously guiding them. But I think it would also, you know, it depends on your age also, how quickly you recover, how much time you have to devote to recovery. I'm talking about like the more average runner now. I wouldn't recommend super high volume unless you're paying close attention to your recovery.
Right.
You know, and you have the time.
Right.
Obviously, the elite competitors, people like Shailene, they do doubles. They run twice a day. They take naps. They pretty much eat,
but
run, sleep, eat, run, sleep. They eat. They run and they recover.
Yeah.
Run and recover.
Right.
Yeah. So you kind of have to just, you know, find what works for you, where you're getting, what mileage works for you, where you're getting the best results, and where you don't feel like you're overtraining.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of like the secret to being successful at running and racing, is like understanding your body.
Yes.
And knowing what distance you need to do as a runner.
Yeah. And coaches do not 100% agree on this. There are some coaches who are advocates of low mileage. And there are coaches who are more advocates of higher mileage. So the one thing I would say, though, just always keep in mind the principle of specificity. And if you are training for a race and you want to get faster, you really do have to eliminate the other activities other than strength training for running.
And is that, but, and that's why you kind of introduced that class of strength training here. It's strength and core, right?
Strength and power. And just strength. We have three blocks. One strength and power, and then strength and core.
Awesome. That's so
great.
So we
kind of, each block has different focus.
Yeah, I definitely think that people who are doing strength and core at the gym are way more of an advantage than I am doing all these other sports, but trying to get faster at running, because I'm losing muscles running.
Yeah.
And then you need those muscles to go faster. So it's like a crazy concept.
You do. And the more higher the mileage, then you start to see, you see the need to keep up with the strength training.
So you need to sort of match your running with your strength.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of training for a marathon, you know, if somebody's training for New York City or a fall marathon, what is the best approach in terms of like putting together a training plan, mapping out your mileage and the different phases and levels and zones you need to be in for training?
So it's recommended that new marathoners run about 25 miles or more per week for a year leading up to the marathon.
Okay.
Hardly anyone does that.
Right.
Most people, the bucket listers, say, I'm going to sign up for a marathon. I have 18 weeks to train. And they start training 9 weeks ahead of the the race. Maybe. Some people do that. You always have those last minute, like, marathons in October, New York City. I mean, sorry, New York City marathons in November. And you get the last minute people starting to train in August. Not recommended. So that's what not to do.
Yeah.
What you should do is, I mean, if it's not realistic to run 25 miles a week for slow miles a week for a year before the race, or at least until you start your training, ideally a year before the race, you should try to keep the weekly mileage up to at least 20 and build the base. So base training for at least 2 to 3 months before you start the actual marathon training. The marathon training will start with a program, a weekly program that will include daily steady state runs and then 2 days of speed. Mm-hmm. So usually the speed's done on Monday, Thursday. And then, you know, you would have a day off somewhere in there. And then the long run is done on the weekend, on Saturday or Sunday. Mm-hmm. But the mileage would increase the long run will increase every week up until the race. Mm-hmm. There's also periodization with the marathon training. So every 4th week, there's a decrease in training load. Mm-hmm. And to allow the body a certain degree of recovery. And then once you reset, you start a little bit higher than where you left off in the 3rd week of that cycle. So 3 weeks going up, you know, increasing the mileage, intensity, and then you drop off for a week and then you start on another
climb, another build.
Another build. Yeah. Exactly.
So it's kind of like if this weekend was the 4th week of some stage of me training for a marathon and my distance was 15 miles slow, then I might start over again next week at like 10 miles or, I don't know, it depends, but
yeah. Yeah.
And there might be like faster miles in there might be some tempo miles in the zone 2 miles or.
On your recovery week?
Yeah.
You would also reduce the intensity. Okay. So, yeah. So you'd pull back on the speed for the tempo run. You probably would not be including tempo runs that week.
Okay.
Yeah. They are kind of closer to the race day. Later in the training cycle.
Later in the training cycle.
Yeah.
Got it.
And then recovery weeks should be reduced intensity as well as miles.
Got it.
Intensity and mileage. I mean, you can still do the speed.
Right.
But you might do, say, one less run or just reduce the mileage like by 20%. Take an extra recovery day.
And you offer training programs as well. Here, your coaches offer training programs.
Yes. And John, being a former Olympian who supervises the program, John Henwood, he doesn't offer a lot of rigidity for his runners, regardless of where they're coming from. I mean, he really wants his runners to follow his program for the duration of the program. For example, they're not allowed to take class because they are following his program and every run is specific to that runner's goals.
That's interesting because, I mean, there's so many different kinds of coaches. So he's one of the coaches that is like, this is the program. This is what you're following. And if you want XYZ results, then do this program.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. He is all about results. So his average marathon PR time for a lot of his clients is about 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So he helps his runners, on average, all of the runners that he works with, get their marathon time down by that much.
That's amazing. I mean, I've taken his class.
But you have to follow the program.
And he's even got you like saying that, which is amazing. So do you feel
Yeah, and I respect John and, you know, we're in agreement. Yes. Like
But he's a good friend.
And I am not good at following programs. So I feel like training with someone like John for me would be, I don't know if I would actually, I would follow the program. I would just end up.
Guys, just solo all the time. I like to have a coach that I can not listen to and pay, but yeah. I'm learning my old age who I am.
Yeah, exactly. And it's supposed to be fun. I mean, you don't want it to feel like a job. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I'm not doing this for money. I'm not doing it for any other reason other than I enjoy it and I like training hard.
Yeah.
I think John would be very upset with me if I trained with him.
Yeah.
Which is why I don't.
I've thought about it. Speaking about marathons, do you feel like running a marathon and training for a marathon is like building a business? it's just another different kind of marathon. There's periodization and people you listen to or don't listen to and risks you take. And
absolutely. And there are so many unexpected things that could occur and learnings during the process. And that's why it's so important to actually do the runs and learn from those runs. So if you don't actually follow the program, put the work in. And I know this because I haven't, you know, I've been loose about following the program sometimes. You don't learn like about nutrition, for example, on a long run. Like, when do I need that nutrition for my 18 miler? At what mile should I be ready? And what type of nutrition? What
right.
works?
Right.
So without doing it, you never, you know, you don't get those learnings. And so like a business, there's a lot of experimenting, and then you have to apply that knowledge to the next month or the next, you know, 3 months or the next year. But with marathon training, you have to apply it to every run. Like,
right.
oh, this worked last week on my long run. That didn't work. And then it's always also like a business, so much more work than I think anyone ever expects.
Mm-hmm.
We see this a lot with people who sign up for the program. And, you know, we make sure to tell, communicate with the runners ahead of time that how much they'll be running.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to do the work. You right. have to, if you want to finish and you want to have a good race experience mm-hmm. on race day and have it be positive and hopefully not too painful,
mm-hmm.
you do have to commit.
You were a runner before you started your business. So when you started, when you opened Mile High Run Club, take me back to like month one.
We opened in November mm-hmm. 2014 here in NoHo mm-hmm. on East 4th Street. In the first month, I mean, doors opened, people came. We had a fundraiser with Scott Jurek
mm-hmm.
in month one
mm-hmm.
for Back of My Feet, which was phenomenal. I mean, it brought ultra runners, ultra running community in the doors. It was for a great cause. He taught a class, great buzz. Then we realized we had bouncy floors in the studio,
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
in the actual training studio. So the treadmills are there's a little more recoil than we expected. I know Andia was teaching at the
yes,
time.
Yes, I think that I big, just, yeah.
Yeah. So we had to shut down uh-huh. for 3 days between Christmas and New Year's to fix the floors. So that was kind of like one thing that was just totally unexpected. But, you know, I think that we were just really, people were really excited because it was the first studio of its kind. And we mm-hmm. still are the only running studio in New York City.
Right.
The only studio devoted
to running. So were you still running in month one when you started the studio? Were you? Mm-hmm. When did your training sort of like drop off?
No. And I didn't run for a while. I was running a little bit here, but I also had an Equinox membership.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember pre-launch, I uh-huh. hadn't actually visited my gym, which is where I do most of the training,
mm-hmm.
since August. So I think it was a good 6 months.
Oh my God. And was that
not much of anything other than being here all the time and sleeping very little and teaching, I don't know how many classes per week, like 16 to 20 classes a week.
Yeah, were teaching a lot.
Yeah, working on Saturdays, working on Sundays. And a lot of my runs were cut short. I remember being running in Central Park and 5 o'clock class needed an instructor. We had a last minute emergency and I had to cut my run short to be back here to teach.
That's when you know it's over and it's beginning.
Yeah. I mean, coverage is no longer an issue, obviously, because
right.
we have.
Yes.
But when you have one studio mm-hmm. and a limited number of coaches,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe a handful of coaches, mm-hmm. we hadn't quite hired enough coaches yet.
Well, you were so new.
We right. didn't have the backup. And it's not like you can, you know, call. It's not like there are a lot of spin instructors in the city.
Right.
You know, we could have gotten outside help if someone else knew how to teach it.
All of your coaches.
They learned how to teach a treadmill class. We taught them how to teach a treadmill class.
Right. But they already had the prerequisite for teaching here was
being a runner.
Being a runner. And also, a lot of the coaches were certified running coaches.
Yes.
Differentiated sort of one of these classes from any class.
Yes.
So
yeah,
those standards were the quality of your brand, right?
Yes.
But you can't just find anyone to teach a running class.
Yeah, exactly. At that time, I think it was maybe we had 8 coaches who were trained mm-hmm. to teach a running class.
Mm-hmm.
And we started ramping up the schedule. You know, people need to sub out. So I spent a lot of time just subbing and doing interviews and rewriting copy.
And so how long were you working on the concept before you actually launched?
It was about 3 years from the idea, but probably a little bit more like just over two from the time that we actually got the team together and started going out to investors.
Right.
So really 2 years to get it off the ground. And then we did have a setback with a real estate deal. We lost out on a space in Flatiron.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of last minute, didn't really have a backup. That delayed us from launch for about 6 months, which was really tough because we just wanted to get open. And I was so impatient. I just wanted to get open.
So you opened with three classes, right? Or were there three types of classes?
What
were
two?
Two.
Yeah, only two.
What were the first two classes? Yeah.
Which was a 60-minute class and then mm-hmm. the Dash 28.
Okay, and then
High 45. Which is more foundation building.
And so how did you come up with the name?
I was inspired by Murakami, what I talk about when I talk about running, mm-hmm. and also the Chris McDougall book, Born to Run. And I wanted to emphasize the feel-good aspect of running because mm-hmm. that's something I had experienced, and I really believe that the runner's high was real.
Uh-huh.
And then obviously the research came out about the endocannabinoids, which are real.
Yeah.
So there's truth to the runner's high. Yeah, and I just think it seemed like a cheeky kind of fun name with a triple entendre, the other being kind of a reference to Colorado and the, uh-huh. the running culture in Colorado specifically.
That's very cool. And the logo?
Oh, thanks. I wanted to create this based on a kind of like a headdress,
mm-hmm.
feathered headdress for a Mexican god. So like god of the hunt.
Are you still doing Mile High Wings?
We are. Yeah. We're planning Iceland for August. I have a new travel guide who has led a trip to Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
That was last spring.
How do you go from running on a treadmill or running outdoors on the streets to training to be running on trails?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay, so there is a certain amount of technique involved mm-hmm. in running on a trail, and it's easy to learn. I mean, it could take a couple hours, if that, to demonstrate what proper technique is or what's advisable for running mm-hmm. on trails. But making the transition from a city runner and a pavement pounder and a treadmill runner is, there's an adjustment to running on a trail. So, I mean, I think the best thing to do is just try it
mm-hmm.
on a non-technical trail, like a very, right. an easier kind of skill level.
Mm-hmm.
Just find something that's suitable for a beginner. And then you just want to follow good technique and have the proper gear.
Right. And also, are there any conditioning, like ankle strengthening conditioning
yes.
type exercises you need to do?
Yeah. It's very important to have good stability for trail running. So what I like to do is my swim coach, who was a triathlete, did this. He would stand on one leg while he was waiting for the subway. So this can be done anywhere. You just stand on one leg like a flamingo.
Yeah. Okay. I got it down. I've got the visual.
Yeah. And just see how long you can hold that.
Uh-huh.
If you're in a gym, obviously you have more tools and you could use the Bosu ball, the half moon ball, and stand on that mm-hmm. on one leg. You could do it with or without weight. I mean, any level of complexity, you could progress that to make it more complex.
Okay.
But that's basic good stability training and reverse lunges to stand. You know, we bring the opposite knee up,
mm-hmm.
do reverse lunge, bring the opposite knee up. Those are all good. And then, you know, you might want to do some agility training also. Mm-hmm. But having the right shoes is important. And, you know, I'd suggest having a Garmin where you can actually track the trail,
mm-hmm.
the route
okay.
on your Garmin, and also have a buddy.
Yeah.
You know, and
like just don't go trail running by yourself.
And like, yeah. Cause you never know. You could get, if you don't know the area, it's, you know, things could go south pretty quickly if you get lost. Day turns to night. You're out there without water, food.
Yeah.
It's getting cold.
Yep. You're not making people want to try trail running. Come try the treadmills at Mile High Run Club. Are you still doing trails
with other runners where other runners go?
Yeah, like in Central Park, like on the pavement trail, the one that goes around the park. No, because we did the.
All the New Yorkers, we're all afraid of nature.
Yeah.
We're just like.
Well, so like even.
That sounds freaky. No, yeah. No, I love trail running.
You said you love trail running, and we did that trail run in Montauk, and I was like, whoa. And it wasn't even bad, but I was like, ooh, there's like holes, there could be ticks, like there's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, you never know. It's come around the corner.
I was afraid I was going to get lost in Montauk. was so afraid. I'm like, I'm going to stay on the beach and watch everyone's stuff. That is the only time I would turn a run, that opportunity to run down. But you do all these great...
There's like thorns. My legs are bleeding. You do want to protect your legs.
Yeah.
Compression socks or a longer legging.
Okay. So we can never talk too much about running, but let's switch gears for a minute because I'd love to hear more about your career as an artist and how all of this sort of ties together.
Yeah. I've always loved to run and I have run for so many different reasons throughout my life. And I've never been super gifted as an athlete, both as a swimmer and as a runner, but I just really, really enjoy it. I think I made the decision gradually over a period of a year or two. And then what really helped me transition was the summer of 2009. I spent the summer with friends in California, in Marin. And I was just taking a break from New York, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I had an exhibition planned for the fall. And I actually pushed it back because I wasn't really excited about my art practice. And I didn't really have a new body of work ready to go. So I kept delaying that show. I did the show eventually after being at Equinox for a while. But once I came back to New York from San Fran, I got a job at Equinox as soon as I landed from...
So you were a trainer already or you got a job and did your certification? I did my certification while I was at Equinox. Okay.
Yeah. Really got the job immediately. I mean, I was lucky. I was hired at Equinox 19th Street. And yeah, I had already kind of been in the tri community for a number of years. So I had a certain degree of racing experience and I had been a competitive swimmer in high school and always been running. So they added me to the staff at Equinox and I was the only trainer who had endurance experience on staff. So that's why they gave me the marathoners.
How did you get started in the art world?
Being an artist to me was my way of rebelling somewhat. And I think I realized that later that I was more interested in rebelling than actually having a career doing this. And I think it was my way of just sort of checking out and just trying to find something else, like a different path, and did end up having a career and I did end up having some opportunity there. And I had 5 solo exhibitions, 3 solo in New York, 1 in Berlin, 1 in Japan, and lots of opportunity to travel internationally, which was great. And it was a lot of fun. I really loved it. And I didn't love the business end of things, but I was very passionate about art and still am. I mean, I still like love talking about it, love kind of analyzing exhibitions, work, bodies of work. But I don't spend a lot of time looking at art these days. But yeah, I feel like I've always followed my passion and turned that passion into kind of a career. And I became less passionate about art at one point and more passionate about this. So I think it just happened.
Yeah.
And people change.
Yeah.
You know, and I know a lot of artists who are still making work and their life depends on it. And I didn't approach it that way. All artists work differently. And I say this is my latest work of art.
Right.
I feel really proud of creating something that didn't exist
before.
And I think that's what I enjoyed the most about being an artist is creating something that didn't previously exist.
Well, this was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Marnie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for tuning in to Marnie on the Move. Head over to our website, MarnieOnTheMove.com, and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, and more. Also, sign up for our newsletter. Just scroll down to the bottom of the site, to the bottom of the website, and hit sign up, because we are gearing up for some really big, exciting announcements, deals, and giveaways. Thanks again for tuning in.